And one day I get a phone call and somebody's like, hi, I'm a casting director on Million Dollar Listing and wanted to see if you wanted to talk to us about being our next cast member. And I was like, very funny, and like hung up. And so like totally rejected them because I thought I was getting catfished.
Today we had on star of Million Dollar Listing, Tyler Whitman. Tyler talks about how meeting an agent on Craigslist changed his life, selling Bobby Flay's home with a chef-inspired kitchen, and tips and tricks on how you can grow one of the most successful teams in your market.
The Broke Agent presents Overask Podcast.
We have real estate celebrity on the show today, Eric.
I know.
Tyler Whitman is here with us.
I mean, real estate celebrity is, I feel like you're underselling me.
We have like a national celebrity, an international star.
Hold on, international treasure. Ooh. An international treasure. Okay. Yeah. And I was telling Eric off air before he came on, I said, Tyler is taller than I thought in person, because we've met a couple times in person now. Taller. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I need to ask quick about the tan. This all natural tan? Because it is fantastic.
No. It's okay. I do a beautiful face of makeup every day when I wake up, and I wish I could tell you that was a joke, but today's about honesty. It's makeup.
Okay. Well, good to know. I mean, and your skin is flawless. I felt like they did me dirty putting me on a panel with you in New York. I felt like it was, you know, we were mismatched, to say the least.
Well, firstly, you're absolutely stunning. I mean, I felt like they did me dirty putting on the panel with you because I just couldn't pay attention to anything else. Now, the tan is fake. The skin is real. This is not fake skin. So I accept the compliment. Thank you.
Amazing. Yeah. Great skin, great head of hair, but it's not about the routine today, even though Eric would like it to be. He's got a very, very crazy skincare routine himself. But today, this is about you, Tyler. For people who may not know you, which I think is kind of hard at this point, I really do, with your rise to fame over the last couple of years. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll get into this?
Sure. So I feel like I'm the guy who stepped in shit and got lucky in life. You know, I took a few risks that have really just paid me back in dividends beyond my wildest dreams. You know, but I think I'm really just like everybody else. You know, I grew up in a small town in the South, come from a very middle-class family. You know, my parents got divorced when I was young, but my mom's a nurse. My dad's retired to Air Force, you know, whereas, as middle-class, like middle of America as it gets. I went to college for like a semester. Wasn't for me, which I think surprised my family a lot because in like high school and middle school, I was like the golden child. You know, I was like straight A's. All my friends were the teachers and I had no other real friends. So I think everybody thought that I was going to like go to college and be a doctor and like, you know, fulfill that fantasy that I think a lot of parents have for their kids. But no, I said, I'm going to go to New York, Mom. And I always, my mom, the story has changed pretty dramatically because when I moved to New York, my mom was like devastated. Both of my parents were so pissed off at me. They were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'll figure it out. And I moved to New York and I was waiting tables at Planet Hollywood in Times Square. And I was also one of those ticket salesmen in Times Square trying to getting like tourists to go to Broadway shows. And for that went on for like a couple of years. I got my real estate license pretty quickly because I had moved in with this guy off of Craigslist and he was a real estate agent and I saw his lifestyle and I was like, maybe I could do that. But of course I wasn't closing any deals and I was only doing rentals, which is actually kind of like a big business in the city. But my bread and butter was like fresh college graduates who were, you know, starting their entry level jobs. You know, so it was the cheapest thing you could find for the smallest fee you could charge. So during that, I was still like waiting tables and doing the ticket sales in Times Square. And it was always like a fear of mine that I would be like on showings and then later be like in the middle of Times Square, like holding flyers, and a client would walk by and they were like, you do this too? And I'd be like, I promise I'm very successful. Anyway, and then I guess I did that for a long time, and that started in like 2006. And then in 2008, when the market crashed, I was like, I'm going to move back home. This just like isn't working out. And all we did back then was like post Craigslist ads. And I ended up like posting this Craigslist ad that changed my life forever and had no idea. But it was like that first moment in my life that like set up the blocks for everything else that ended up happening. And these guys responded to it. It was like one of the biggest Craigslist leads I had ever gotten. They were looking for like a $6,000 a month, 3-bedroom. And we went out, I got them an apartment. I think by the time everything was split up, I made like $3,000. And it was enough for me because I was about to move back home. I was like, the market has crashed. I'm broke. My mom was right. I need to go to college. And but that $3,000, which doesn't go very far in New York City, was enough for me to be like, maybe I could do this. Like maybe I could land here. Anyway, those guys changed my life. They had just graduated from Princeton, ended up sending me a ton of Princeton grads. And I ended up kind of becoming like the Princeton guy. And then that made me the Harvard guy. And that made me the Yale guy. And all of a sudden I was like the Ivy League relocation guy, which always made me laugh. And I was like, if you knew the truth. And then I ended up getting Phil and David, who were the co-founders of Triple Mint, had graduated from Yale, reached out to me, and they were like, we're thinking about starting this company. Do you want to do it? That was pile of shit number two that I stepped in. And I don't know why I said yes, but I was like, sure, why not? I've got nothing to lose. And we ended up starting that company together, building it. At the time, I was very overweight, lost a bunch of weight. My business exploded. I got $1 million listing, got acquired by the agency, and and life has been quite a dream come true, like beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest. It's been a crazy ride.
So, and you wanted to emulate someone that you met on Craigslist, and you thought that you liked that lifestyle. So this guy was looking for a roommate on Craigslist. You got in with him and you're like, I like this guy. I want to be a real estate agent. And then you put out, what's this Craigslist ad that you put out that changed your life? I'm trying to understand what it is. This is what attracted the other college students for relocation?
Yeah. So how old are you guys?
32.
I'm 31. Okay. So I'm not much older than you guys. I'm 37. I can't remember when Craigslist went away, but for a while, Craigslist was this website for, it was a one-stop shop. You could sell cars there. You could sell bikes there. But it was the main hub to go search for rental apartments. This was like before Zillow was big, before all of these other third-party websites that everybody uses now. Craigslist was the place. And you would post these very homemade looking ads. You know what I mean? It literally looked like an elementary school kid had made it. You like typed up a few words, you attached a few pictures. There was also, and I'm not just saying this, there was like a full out hookup portion of Craigslist as well, where you could just like post sex ads. I mean, it was literally anything you wanted, you could get on Craigslist. And honestly, so much gratitude for that website. It made my dream come true. I met that roommate because you could also post sublets on there. He had a 2-bedroom. So he had posted that he was like subletting one of his bedrooms looking for a roommate. And so I just responded to that ad and ended up becoming his roommate. And then ended up realizing that he did real estate for a living. And at the time, he's actually still in the business and we still know each other. Our relationship is very interesting. But he, as a matter of fact, for a long time, he ended up working for me, which was an interesting part of our story together. But anyway, yeah, I saw him, posting ads all day, taking calls, leaving the apartment to go show a few other apartments. We were living in the East Village and he only worked in the East Village. And I remember I just like, because I was only getting a small peek behind the curtains, but I was like, oh my God, I was like, this guy's like sitting here in his underwear and t-shirt taking client calls. And then he throws on a pair of pants and unlocks a door and seems to make a nice little living for himself.
It's that simple
until you get in there and start doing it. Because I really thought, I was like, I'll just get my real estate license and live his life. I was like, that looks nice. Which was not the reality. I struggled really hard. It's always funny, like whenever you have like some public success, which has been really fun, especially because the show, I stopped selling in or doing transactions at all in 2013, when the Triple Mint journey really began. And I was behind the scenes of the company. So I was building out the sales team. I was building out the sales models. I was doing all the hiring, all the recruiting. So I didn't sell for like 4 years. And then I started selling again in 2017. And it really did feel like I was like starting from scratch, but except all of a sudden I had this baseline. You know, I had built this company. I felt like I had a lot more confidence, a lot more knowledge to like go out there and build a truly successful team. And so when Million Dollar Listing came into my life, I got cast at the end of 2018, and they were like, so you've really only been selling for like a year. And I was like, I guess that's one way to look at it. Yeah. And, you know, and so the show always made it look like I was like brand new, up and coming. And, you know, it's, I guess there's two sides of the coin, but a lot of people are like, wow, you're such an overnight success. And I'm like, do you have any idea like what I've been through for the last...
Like this started on Craigslist.
Craigslist.
Yeah.
17 years ago, I was like an overnight success. Like, are you kidding me?
That's how it always is. It's mm-hmm. Everyone thinks that. How did you get in front of Million Dollar Listing?
I was a Craigslist ad. No, I'm just kidding. I was like,
everything goes back to that.
I was like, Million Dollar Listing, I think I'm your guy.
The casting person just finds it.
So, it's actually a funny story. I started my sales team, the Whitman team that I currently have, in April of 2017. And that was kind of like when I was like, okay, I was like, this is the life I want to build for myself. I want to be a top agent and I want to do huge business and interact with clients. And started off to like mild success. And I think it was like end of 2017. It might've been early 2018. I got very lucky because my best friend, who's still my best friend now, at the time was in a very serious relationship with Bobby Flay. And Bobby Flay had an apartment in Chelsea that he needed to sell. And through that connection, one of my first big listings was Bobby Flay's apartment.
Damn.
How much was that one?
It was like $7 million, $7.5 million. And then, you know, and he was, I got to be honest, he was amazing to me because, you know, he knew what he was doing for me. And I think he like loved being able to gift that to me and just be like, this is going to put you on the map. You know, and that was another pile of shit that I stepped in, you know, where it was like, it was just like one of those gifts of life of, you know, I had been friends with, her name is Helena. She's now married to somebody else with kids. It's not a thing, but they were together for like 3 or 4 years. And, you know, but I had known her at that point for like 10 years. She was one of my first friends in the city. And she's a really successful actress. I don't know if you guys have seen the HBO Max show, The Other Two. Molly Shannon plays the mom. She's the blonde daughter, like the main blonde daughter. So but at that time, she and I were both like brand new to New York and like struggling and like trying to find our way. So I get Bobby Flay's listing. It gets a ton of press. And I'm so excited, right? I'm like, oh my God. I was like, this is happening and I am going to be a very big deal. and all of a sudden I started for like the next 6 months, I got catfished on that listing so many times. I mean, there were so many people. And after a while, I started to realize that these are agents and definitely New York City agents reaching out to me, pretending to be buyers and asking me like very strange questions that were like trying to like float me into territory of either like violating fair housing. Like it was almost like they were like trying to catch me in something is always what it felt like. And that was how I would start sniffing it out. They would start asking like, there's a lot of rules in New York City. Like, we can't really talk about school systems, and people love to catch us talking about school systems, and which is a huge motivator for people who are buying, right? They're like, what schools are nearby? Are they good? we're not allowed to talk about that in our market. And I was getting a lot of other people who were like, I'm actually an investor in like one of Bobby's restaurants and, you know, wanted to buy this, but wanted to talk to you first. And they would like even go as far as to like make offers for me to like present to him. It was wild. And so once the excitement, because I kept getting like wrapped up in the excitement and wasn't even seeing these for being catfish moments. I was like, oh my God, these people are like really coming for me. And after a while, I became pretty jaded. It was like almost every inquiry I got on the apartment, I was like, it's fake. You know, it's like, I was like, it's a fucking catfish. So one day, and I started just getting crazy phone calls. And one day I get a phone call and somebody's like, hi, I'm a casting director on Million Dollar Listing. And we've been coming across like some of your posts on social media and wanted to see if you wanted to talk to us about being our next cast member. And I was like, very funny, and like hung up.
Classic.
And so like totally rejected them because I thought I was getting catfished. Then Ashley, who has been on my team since day one, she's like my superstar. She's still on my team. She calls me and she's like, I just got a very interesting phone call from like a casting director for Million Dollar Listing. And they really want to meet with you. And I was like, yeah. I was like, honey, it's like another one of like the Bobby Flay catfish moments. And she was like, I thought so at first too. She was like, but it ended up turning out I have a bunch of mutual friends with this person. She's like, I'm pretty sure it's legit. And I was like, well, I'm not doing it. And I was just in like such like a negative headspace at the time of just like, I hate this industry. A few days later, I agreed to FaceTime with them. And then once I FaceTimed with them, the FaceTime was actually, it was literally just kind of like what we're doing right now. I mean, we were just talking to each other, but it just like really hit it off with the person. We had great chemistry. We ended up FaceTiming for like 2 hours. And I remember I hung up and I was like, I was like, that felt kind of real, almost as if like maybe I have a chance at this. Cause I was still going in like with kind of like rolling my eyes. I didn't have a huge book of business like the other cast members at the time. And I was like, well, what the hell? Why do they want me? And then they asked me if I could come in and do some things on camera. And so I did. And it was literally like a day later that they called me and told me that they were offering me the gig. It all happened very quickly. I was like, really? I was like, I thought that, and I never had to meet any of the other cast members. There was all sorts of, I was like, I'm sure I'm going to have to film with the guys to see like what our chemistry is. No, it was like, I went and filmed by myself and they were like, we like you. It's a yes.
What kind of stuff did they ask you to do on camera? Was it, you know, do a fake property tour, do an open house, or was it just kind of reading lines?
Genuinely, there's nothing scripted on the show. And even like when they're filming the actual show, I'm not just saying this to be like, protect myself. I promise you, this is the truth. And all of my clients are so shocked. Like when we're filming an episode, the producers hide in a closet and they're like watching on a monitor and like, the only thing that they ever come out and say is like, hey, that joke you just told was really funny, but it got muffled in your microphone. Can you re-deliver it? And then the joke never lands, you know? And I was like, that sucks. I was like,
never
was really
works the second time.
Never does.
I meant for like the casting specifically.
Right. But even in the casting, all we did was kind of like that direct to camera stuff. So when you're doing like, I guess this is like a little look behind the scenes, but when you're doing the stuff where you're talking directly to camera, you're just sitting in a studio, sitting in like literally like a folding chair. It's not fancy at all. And the producers just ask you questions about like what you filmed the day before. And so it's not like you're like watching it and reacting to it. They're like, what did you think when you walked into that place? What did you think when so-and-so said this to you? What did you, you know, and so they're really just like interviewing you. And I can't remember what questions she asked me. I do remember when I first sat down, she said, so, you know, we know that you have like a little bit of a weight loss story and, you know, would love if you could share with us a little bit about that, which I knew that question was coming. I just assumed that that question would be coming because at that point, the weight loss was like much fresher than it is now. And I remember when I was like telling her that story, I was fine. She was getting emotional. And all I thought was, I was like, I'm crushing this.
Bobby, I just need to go back to Bobby Flay's listing for a second. In the listing description, did you write Chef Inspired Kitchen? I need to know.
It's funny that you ask about the kitchen because we were like, we thought about so many different ways because it was all over the press that it was his apartment. I was like, what funny thing can we do? And we did end up landing on Chef Inspired Kitchen because it was like tongue in cheek to us. And it was fun when people would come through to fish, but there were so many other things that we wanted to do, like, that ultimately we decided was just like a little too tacky, but I was like, we wanted to have some fun with it.
I wrote that on every listing, no matter what, just because I assumed everything was a chef-inspired kitchen. I had no idea what it meant.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, that was actually a chef-inspired kitchen. I mean, I can tell you that. Well, you heard it here, like, folks.
You could have a to-go box-inspired kitchen, for sure.
that too. So all you need to do is get Bobby Flay's listing. You can land million-dollar listing. Well, first you need to start... I think Craigslist is coming back after this show, after this podcast. I think you're going to bring Craigslist back. It's just, your story is so unique. I mean, from Craigslist to, you know, kind of in and out of real estate to Bobby Flay's listing to million-dollar listing. And then, so since you started million-dollar listing to now, has your business drastically changed?
It has. When I say it has, I don't know why I had any hesitation there. I mean, it's been such a dream come true. You know, like, I now forever, my first goal was I want to sell like as a team. I was like, I want to have like a $30 million sales volume for my team, thinking like that's $1 million commission income. I was like, by the time we all split it up, we'll make like 200 grand. It's going to be amazing. And then, you know, we did that. We didn't do that our first year, but then we did way more than that our second year. And like, I think we did like 40 something million our second year. And then, and I remember I was like, maybe I could be like $100 million team. And that was always the number that I put on a pedestal. And I thought that life was only reserved for like the crazy superstar agents that were born into this, had been doing it their whole life. And the first year that million-dollar listing was on, we did like 90 million, we did like 87, I want to say. And I was like, I can't believe how close we got. The year after, so 2019 was the first year that it aired. So that was the first time I really felt like an influx of business. And then 2020, you know, the New York City market was crickets. I mean, we weren't allowed to show, we weren't allowed to do anything. And, but we still like pulled it up by the bootstraps, even though it was like literally nothing, everything that was going on in the rest of the world. I was so jealous, like watching everybody post about how crazy the market was. And I was like, must be nice because I was like, we were at an all time slow. But we still pulled it up by the bootstraps but we didn't quite do 100 million. I want to say we did like 98 million that year. And then in 2021, we did 250 million. And then all of a sudden, like, it unlocked this box in my head, because million-dollar listing for me, I came much later in the game. You know, my first season was season 8. And at that point, I do think for like the earlier cast members, I think they got super famous, right? Like, I think they became kind of like household name famous. I'm like the, if you know, you know, guy, you know, like the diehards love me, but you know, I have no extra swagger getting tables at restaurants. Like, people are like, can't you sit anywhere? I'm like, no, if there's a wait, there's a wait for me too. But Ryan actually always told me, he was like, you know, he's like, there's a big misconception that the show is going to air and your phone's going to ring off the hook. And he's like, that's just not what happens. He was like, now you just have to use the confidence that you have from the show to go out there and make things happen. And that first year, I didn't have the confidence yet. You know, it was like, I was still adjusting. A lot of my life had changed. You know, I had a lot of, honestly, I call it my inner fat boy syndrome, you know, like that, I grew up obese and there was like always that person inside of me that was just like, you don't belong here. Like, you know, you're not good enough for this. And it took me a while to like overcome it. And then once I got out there and figured, I was like, oh wait, I was like, people love working with me and I am really good about this. And I genuinely care. Like, I love real estate. I care about people's investments. I care about helping them through these transitions. And, you know, when I started like stepping into that power and owning that, it changed my business forever. You know, 2022 sucked and we still did 200 million. You know, we're already at, we're at like 65 million right now for this year. Hold on. I actually have my dashboard right in front of me. I'm sorry, 57 and a half million.
So far 57 and a half. You got everything right in front of you.
You know, although I lost you guys. What, there you are coming back.
We're still here. We're not going anywhere.
I didn't know if you were going after the dogs.
No, not. So 57 million already. So that's like, this is probably going to be a record breaking year for you.
Yeah. I've got big plans. You know, I finally have, and it's not coming from a place of ego, right? Like, it's coming from a place of, I'm not a competitive person, which I think has always been like an interesting thing for me in real estate. Like, I don't submit my numbers for rankings or anything like that. Cause I'm just like, that's not, A, the only person checking the rankings are other real estate agents. And so I'm like, I don't really know what that's about. But B, it's just not what motivates me. You know, like what motivates me is I've got a big vision for my life. You know, I want to do a lot of really awesome things. And it's not about the money or the power. It's about like the experience I want to have while I'm flying around on this planet. And like, that's what gets me going.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because when we were talking in Palm Springs, I didn't know this. You're only in New York a couple months of the year now, correct?
So this past year was very unique. So I own a place in Sag Harbor, and I sell a lot. And Sag Harbor's out in the Hamptons, and it's a huge chunk of my business. We sell a lot out there. And so my schedule is always, I'm Monday through Thursday in the city. And then Thursday through, I leave at some point on Thursday to head out to Sag Harbor. And then Thursday through Sunday out there. And then right now I'm down in Palm Beach. And I'm basing down here and have been since December and will be through April. And this is the first time I've done this. Probably going to be the last. So, you know, when you add it up this past year, because I spent, you know, I'm spending a third of the year down here in Florida, is a unique year. But, you know, my passion in life is horses. And, you know, I love competing and doing the equestrian life. And every winter in Wellington, which is like right beside Palm Beach, there's a huge horse competition. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I've got the money right now. I was like, I've got an amazing team in place. So I still work a ton, but I will say that 80% of my job is behind the scenes now. You know, I'm bringing in the business. I'm definitely like cultivating all the leads, bringing in the opportunities. My team does 95% of the legwork. And that's just, honestly, it's been best for all of us. Like once I figured out that system, that was the system that just like allowed us to completely catapult. Because I was like, my best time is talking to my clients. It's actually not on the showings, like talking to them about where we should price, what time we should do this, what we need to do to the home, and really getting to the core of kind of like what their emotional motivations are and like why they're selling, why they're buying, and whatever life circumstance they're going through. Like that's my gift in this business, is, you know, getting on the same page as the person that I'm working with and really holding their hand through that process from that regard. And our clients love it. Everybody's like, well, how do you explain to them that you're not going to be the one doing the showing? I was like, It's part of my presentation. I was like, it's not like an awkward thing at all. I was like, so here's how we do things, and this is why it works really well for us. And people are like, amazing. I was like, we're on the phone all the time. You talk to me constantly because I'm not always out with other clients. Like I'm on your beck and call, and people love it.
Everyone stop for a second. This market is a little bit tighter than it has been in the past few years, which means leads are not necessarily banging down the door. But you know who isn't worried right now? Agents who use Boomtown, the number one rated real estate CRM in the game.
That's right. Boomtown was actually founded in 2008, Eric. Do you know that?
Yeah, the same year the Phillies won the World Series against the Rays. How could I forget?
I'll take your word for it. In the middle of a housing crisis, their CEO, Greer Allen, built it from the ground up with the explicit intention of empowering agents to be successful no matter the market. So if you're ready to build a truly bulletproof business, visit boomtownroi.com/overask. Plus, see how you can score 750 big ones in free digital advertising. That's boomtownroi.com/overask. Is it weird being out of New York and like not being able to kind of oversee everything hands-on because you're just kind of always away?
Yeah, like if you're not seeing that a weird... the actual... Yeah, exactly. If you're not seeing the actual house and being able to articulate that to a potential buyer, or just being like boots on the ground there.
So if it's a sales listing, I see all of our listings. I go out, you know, so they definitely, I know all of our listings inside and out. And, you know, I fly back and forth from New York at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. So I'm still up there constantly. I will say my team, I'm very lucky. I have no turnover on my team. I've never had an agent quit my team. We just have such like an amazing system. We have such amazing camaraderie that it really feels like a family, and everybody makes an amazing living. It's not, my team is not the kind of team where the guy up top is making a gazillion dollars and working with 10 assistants who are, you know, working for 30 grand in hopes that they learn something so they can do it for themselves. You know, like, everybody is paid like the professionals that they are on my team. And that's because any single person on my team could leave my team and start a team right now. Like, they're all that solid. And if I need to get involved to help them close a buyer, I do. And I certainly have, but it's rare. It's rare. Like, they're such professionals and they're so respected. And I think like our systems and like our brand is just so respected, but really just meeting them. Like, I don't think when people meet my team members, they're like, this person is so well-spoken. This person is so passionate about real estate. This person clearly knows what they're talking about. So the client just trusts them. And for me, I'm definitely more on the phone with our sellers for sure. There are buyers along the way that, especially the ones that, you know, they're just the kind of person who struggles to make a decision in general. I'm good at coming in and doing the final close without having seen the apartment. You know, it's just like, listen, it was like, we talked in detail, you know, and this is what you want. You've seen 20 apartments now. This is clearly the one that meets all of your needs. It's the only one that's even come close. And, you know, do you want to, you know, and whatever that conversation needs to be, you know, I can usually at least get to the bottom of what the issue is. You know, it doesn't mean like I have 100% batting average and like, I'm the closer, I go in and they take it. You know,
that's good.
I was going to ask that actually.
Pretty good. Well,
you did say in one of your videos that you had close to 100% batting average, that you were 97% successful from a listing pitch perspective. So how did you manage that? First off, how did you even track that? Matt and I were talking about this. We've never tracked a thing like that. Second, you said you had like a magic superpower in the room. So I want to know what that was and how you got that percentage so high.
That's a great question. So listing pitches are actually really easy to track. You know, it's very easy to just keep a running chart of every single property you pitch. And then you know which ones you get and you know which ones you don't.
I thought you said that was a good question. That was a stupid question.
I know. I was like, well, the good part of the question was, how did I get so good at it?
That was the part.
Right. So because of you know, when I first started doing social media videos, there was like nobody doing social media videos. So I really found that I was getting a ton of leads through my social media marketing. I was doing a series called Whitman Wisdom. And a lot of times I would just go meet with people. Decided that they did or did not like me before they gave me the opportunity to come on the pitch. I mean, there's just so much information about me available online that if I'm not somebody's cup of tea, which is a huge portion of people, they usually don't let me come over, right? Like I usually just don't get the pitch. And so, and I've become extremely grateful for that. And I talk about this, like anytime I'm speaking at anything real estate related, I'm like, you need to put the content out there. And people are like, but I'm so afraid of like what my clients are going to think. I'm like, yeah, listen, if they don't like you, just hope that you never hear from them again. It's the best thing that can happen to you. Instead of like putting all of this time and energy into doing like your best work, and maybe you do an amazing presentation, but if somebody doesn't like you, they don't like you. Like, welcome to being a human on planet Earth. And I don't want to have to waste any of my time or energy going in and talking to people that no matter how great of a job I do, they're like, I just don't like this guy. You know what I mean? He's just not my people. And because there's so much information about me available online, I think most people have decided that they're working with me before I get there. I really do believe that, because they're just like, he's my cup of tea. He does this all the time. There's enough proof and track record of success that we can just verify doing this the old fashioned way, that when I get there, I always have my listing pitch with me. I don't even think I need a full hand. I probably need two or three fingers to count the amount of times that somebody actually wanted to go through my actual listing presentation with me. To me, everything is a conversation. You know, I'm very good at like matching. I use DISC to kind of like help me flow and like figure out like what aspects of my personality I want to bring out in a showing and how I want to match this person. But I treat everything as just a conversation. You know, I want to go in, learn what's going on in their life, give them my advice. And once I'm there, usually if I don't get the listing, it's 9 times out of 10, it's because we couldn't agree on price.
What are you on DISC? I'm a high DI.
That, me too, baby. I'm like right at noon.
Yeah. Okay. And I was actually going to ask back to your team, because you have next to no turnover, which is very rare. I was going to ask how you hired. Do you use DISC for your hiring process?
So I will moving forward, but right now I got lucky that we have like a pretty well-rounded DISC. I hear a lot of agents saying like, you want a lot of eyes because eyes are the best salespeople. I'm like, well, when they're talking to other eyes, sure. But I was like, but they drive S's and C's batshit. So, I have, Josh and Luke, are both star agents on my team, and they both do Josh is an S and Luke is a C, and like they're really great for those kind of clients. And then I have like me and Ashley are pretty much the exact same personality, and she and I all of my team members are like family, but Ashley is like that sister that I have very healthy confrontation with all the time, but we do it always coming from a place of love, you know, but she's the team member that is always, she just really wants us to always be getting better. She never wants us to be complacent, you know? And I think every team needs to have a member like that, who's like, this is fine and all, but like, shouldn't we be trying this? Shouldn't we be doing that? And I think a lot of team leaders get triggered by it, and they're like, you know, stay in your lane. Like, don't leave me alone. And I used to feel that way a little bit when she would come at me. And now I'm like, oh no, let's have a conversation. Cause a lot of times we get to the end of it and I'm like, oh, you're absolutely right. And that's like not a hard thing to try. But I think so many people are like so protective over their business. You know, they're like, don't try to change anything. And I'm very open to change. I'm very open to feedback. I love feedback. I don't think I'm the best at anything. And, so I'm always, always open to hearing what other people are experiencing and thinking. And I think that's been like probably the best thing about my hiring, is when I'm interviewing somebody, I want to know what their opinions are, right? Like, I want to know what they think this industry needs. I want to know what they think they're good at. I want to know what they think they could bring. And really just kind of learn communication styles. I communicate really, really well with my team. like really, really well. It's such a safe space. Anybody can talk about anything. Like today, I literally just sent out a text because we've been trying to incorporate Follow Up Boss as like our CRM. And it's a big project, not only from just like getting all of your contacts in there and your database organized and doing all of that work, but then like developing the habits of actually using it. And, and I pay for all of these things out of my pocket. And so, I have a pretty large monthly expense nut of things that I pay for the team. And so, of course, I want to make sure that if I'm paying for these things, they're actually using them. And so today I was like, safe space, I'm 10 grand into Follow Up Boss. How are we liking it? who's actually using it? And I got nothing but honest responses. A lot of people were like, I'll be honest. I have not built the habit yet. Like I'm not in there and I'm not doing it. And none of them were surprises to me. The people who are in there using it are, I'm like, of course you're using it. You're the exact personality type. You're my S, you're my C. Of course you're in there using it. It's us D's and I's who are like, we'll figure it out. Yeah. Like, whatever happens.
I was just going to say. Well, I mean, if you do not like Follow Up Boss, you can always go to Boomtown. That's boomtownroi.com/overask. That's our sponsor.
There's a link.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right.
Oh,
yeah,
do you need to cut out my?
No. This is perfect. Yeah, it's a
Cooper
great.
Cut
great,
out all of the last 4 minutes.
This is great
please.
Transition. But I agree with so much you said, and it's refreshing to hear as a team lead that you really like listen to what everyone's saying. I find so much that a team lead will hire. Whoever they hire, they'll have their agents, they'll have maybe someone, a marketing person, a videographer, and then they tell those people how to do their job, which is like, that kind of defeats the purpose of why you hired them.
Oh yeah.
So it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I have a unique role on my team, which is Bailey. And Bailey is my right hand. Her title is director of operations. She's basically the CEO. And so, my team in the city, I have 6 agents and 2 agents in the Hamptons. But I've really overinvested on the staff side. So not overinvested, but I think I've invested more than the average agent does on the staff side. So I have 4 support staff. I'm sorry, I just hired a 5th. So I have 5 support staff, to keep the systems going. So I have 1 person whose full-time job is to nurture all the leads. I have another person whose full-time job is to do all of our board applications, which is kind of a New York City specific thing, but it is a full-time job. And, but Bailey is, she's the queen bee. She's the one running the show. She's the one tracking everybody's metrics, making sure that everybody's hitting their numbers. And that was a bigger investment for me. That's not to get somebody who's actually capable of that. Cause I do not know how to do it, right? Like it was not something that was like in my wheelhouse. That was not something that's in, and still not in my skill set. And so I knew I was going to have to hire somebody who had a sales management background. She was a big sales manager at Yelp. This was like exactly what she did on like a different sales business model. And she came in, fully systematized us, fully built everything out. But that's not a hire that you're probably, unless you just find somebody who's got a very natural gift and doesn't know their value, that's not a $60,000 or $70,000 a year hire. And it's really scary for agents to be like, oh, I need to make like a big investment in somebody who's got real business talent. And at the time I brought her on my team 4 years ago. And she is also my biggest cheerleader. She could be the life coach because it was like before I was on $1 million listing and she was like, I want to work for you. She's like, I feel like something really special is going to happen with you. And Bailey has a litmus test for hiring. So she's always the first interview before anybody talks to me. And Bailey was like, if it doesn't feel like it would be a dream come true for this person to work for us, she's like, I don't pass them on to you. And she was like, because I only want people on this team who feel like they've won the lottery, who feel like this is like the best thing that could ever happen to them. And she's like, and I'm not mad if it's not. She was like, it doesn't need to be like your dream to work for us. And she was like, but I only want to work with people who it is their dream. And she was like, because that's when we get the best results.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you've had that retention just because so many agents choose to join a team or become a buyer's agent as a stepping stone to just further their career or to get the exposure, which they know they would get under you, to then become a solo agent and then do their own thing. So that's awesome that you've retained all those agents. I also kind of wanted to shift to your content, because I noticed before this that you went from no posts until basically June of 2022. So I'm assuming you deleted or archived a bunch of posts, and I wanted to know why. And then I kind of want to get into your podcast, of course, with Glenda. So why did you delete all those posts?
You know, I've gone through a lot of changes in my life, just like personally and professionally. And for, you know, literally since childhood, like I think the devil inside of me would do anything for attention, right? Anything for a laugh, to get a giggle out of people. And a lot of times that was like me playing a character of, you know, it wasn't very authentic. It was just like, please like me, please love me, was like the subtext of everything that I did. And it was just exhausting, you know? And I finally got to this place in my personal life and my career where I was like, oh, just like being me, whatever me is the best thing that I can do. And it was like the most powerful thing that I ever learned in my business. Cause I think we all, like, authenticity is like the buzzword of marketing and real estate and probably most industries, but I'm in real estate, so it feels like it's ours. and so I was looking at those things, and I was like, I was pretty good at playing the character. So I think it came across authentic. I think people were like, Tyler's so fun. Like, Tyler's so, and I am those things. But I watched so much of my content back and was like, oh God, I was like, it's just not me. You know what I mean? Like, it's not who I am anymore. I do want to elevate my brand, and like, I'll always be playful. I love being playful. I love having a good time. I love sitting around with my people and laughing and making people feel good about themselves. Like, that's how I want to spend the rest of my life. You know, like that, do that every day. I'm fucking golden. But I don't want to do it fake. And a lot of my content, even though it probably presented as authentic, just didn't feel authentic to me. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm different now, especially like once I got sober and everything just kind of like shifted for me and like what was important. And also really getting to that spot in my life where it's like, I have enough. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so happy that my business continues to grow each year. But I don't necessarily need it to, like, you know, like my lifestyle, like what comes in, the work-life balance, like it feels really good right now. And like, if it continues to grow organically in a way that still feels good, then like, I'm all about it. But I was just like, I'm good right now. And I wanted my content to reflect that. And I started like going through and kind of like picking and choosing things. And I was like, but that one's good. And I want to keep that one. I was like, oh, it was like, and that one was like money. And so what I eventually did is I was like, you know what? I was like, those things are so far down in like the Tyler Whitman history. I was like, let's do like the greatest hits. And so I deleted everything, made some new content that I felt good about that felt much more in line with like how I show up in the world today. And then every now and then I'll revisit an old video that I was like, I love that video. Like, I love that side of myself. I love how I was showing up there. And it's fun to share it now with like a little reflection caption of like, here's where I was when this video was going on, and here's why it was such like a big deal to me at that time. And here's what happened as a result of that. And those stories are fun to share, because I actually feel like talking about how that video impacted my life or how that moment impacted my life gets me more engagement with the audience than the initial video ever did.
Yeah. The before after videos crush. Matt does some in his speeches where he'll show, you know, where it looked like he was trying to do real estate education videos in comparison to his hilarious videos. And Byron, my partner in BAM, also does these side-by-side videos where he's like, here's my first video on real estate in 2015 compared to what it is now. And it really is cool to see that growth. So I like, what kind of stuff were you posting that you were embarrassed about? You said you were being like overly goofy. Was it a party lifestyle? Like, what kind of stuff do you want to just delete?
I mean, there was, so Whitman Wisdom went on for like 6 seasons, and I was doing 12 episodes a season. And so there were like 72 episodes of Whitman Wisdom out. And I think the vast majority of them were more about me going for a cheap joke than they were about providing any sort of value or any way of like truly getting to know who I was. And the one that always like turned my stomach was, and I remember when I filmed it, I thought it was the funniest thing I had ever done. But season 5 of Whitman Wisdom, was the first. I usually went into a studio to do it. In season five, it was like the height of my drinking. And the we decided, I was like, why don't we do this in my apartment? I was like, and like come into my home and like we'll do Whitman Wisdom in my living room and it'll be so fun and cute. And so the crew came over. And I started making margaritas for everybody, like, and through it, like, I was the only one drinking. And I remember thinking I was being so funny, and I got progressively, cause we filmed for like 4 or 5 hours and I was getting progressively and progressively more drunk. It was like drunk history meets, real estate info videos. And, you know, and then, and I, and even whenever they sent me the edits back, I was like, this is gold. I was like, this is so good, you know. And then a couple years later, you watch it back and you're like, that's not funny. Like, that's actually, it's like pretty pathetic. And, you know, and so nothing from season five will be coming out of the vault. But, you know, so that's probably the one that's like the worst for me. And it wasn't even like I said something ridiculous. It was just because each episode is a minute, you know? And so it was 12 minutes of absolute stupidity and had no purpose of being on my social media feed.
Yeah, well, Eric, we should just pack it in. I mean, he's kind of we're found out. I mean, that's kind of what we've been doing for years.
just trying to make people laugh as much as possible.
Well, no, but like you guys, so wait, hold on. So there's a difference between, because you guys, your content is genius. I'm such a big fan of both of you. And even before I met you guys, I used to like share all of your stuff and like send it to my clients whenever I thought that like the client that you're making fun of was like, or being playful about, I don't know if you want to call it making fun of them. I would send it to the client. I was like, yeah. And so I would like send it to the client that like matched it. And it would always help me because it was my way of being like, this is you. And, you know, but like creating a space where we could laugh about it instead of me being like, you're rude. I would just send it to them. And I was like, people make jokes about you online and they haven't even met you.
That's the best thing I've ever heard, because everyone would say, don't share this with your clients. Don't share this to your Instagram feed or to your stories, because then your client's going to think it's about them. I love the fact that you just used it and just sent it straight to your clients, because it is someone else saying it. It's way easier when it's someone else as opposed to you doing it. So I'm glad it has provided a little bit of value. So in terms of your content progression, your content variety on your Instagram is fantastic, because you're still doing wisdom content, I saw. And then
so I started doing
like a market update on Mondays, and then of course the podcast. So talk about your content strategy a little bit.
So for a long time, in one sitting one day, I busted out 50 videos. I think so far I've posted like 30 of them. The other, I think everybody kind of deals with this. You get a batch of videos back and you're like, most of these are pretty good and I'm going to use them. And then there's a few that I'm like, they'll just always be on my phone. Yeah. And that's kind of like where I am with. And at first I was being really strategic about it. I was like, I'm going to do market updates and then I'm going to do these. And I'll be totally honest with you right now. I feel like internet, social media content is a very crowded space. You know, it's very hard to be different now. And it was a lot easier whenever I started this, because for the longest time, like at all the Tom Perry conventions back in like 2016 and 2017, I was the only example they showed, because I was the only person doing it back then. And I remember I was like, I'm amazing, you know, but now it's like weird if you're not doing it. And so I will say I've been kind of like taking a step back and just trying to think of like, what am I going to do next? I feel like I'm on pause again, not because I'm unhappy with the content that's out there, but I'm just kind of like, you know, what's next for me? And I don't quite have the answer to that yet. You know, so even right now, I think you'd probably say I haven't posted in quite a long time. and that's, I guess you could say, somewhat strategic. It was just like, I'm not just going to start putting out content that I'm not that excited about. I was like, I want to come up. There's a few things brewing that I feel good about, but I'm kind of starting to think like, people hire real estate agents. I was going to say me, you, anybody. People hire real estate agents because of who they are, right? Like most people, can learn the mechanics of a transaction, of a negotiation, and, you know, with a little experience under your belt, you can get it across the table. And of course, people want to work with people who have done it before. But the vast majority of the time, people are hiring people they like, you know, and now I'm trying to think more of my content of like, what's a unique way of getting to know me and like the real me and what's important to me and how I'm involved in my community. And, you know, the other side of being on $1 million listing is like how I'm still just a person, just like everybody else, you know, because it does make you a little bit unapproachable. I think a lot of people see your content and they're like, oh, that's the guy from TV. He's too busy for me. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Give me a call.
I think the content has evolved also to the Glitter and Gay podcast with Glenda Baker. Like, to me, when I'm listening to that, that seems like the outlet that you're unbelievably comfortable in. Like the storytelling, the back and forth, the chemistry you guys have is fantastic. So speak upon that a little bit. How'd you meet Glenda? How'd you start the podcast? And I think you're like top 10% in all podcasts right now, which is incredible. So everybody check it out.
It's been my favorite thing I've ever done, including $1 million listing. It's like, I met Glenda when, you know, she and I were both just two real estate agents trying to build a team and like find some success. You know, neither of us, were on the map at all in terms of like the public eye. And I loved her right away. And she and I were both different. You know, we knew that we were like not the average everyday real estate agent. And we always just had like a special connection. And I think it was 20. I knew I was filming for $1 million listing. I don't think it had aired yet. And we were at a Tom Ferry convention. And I sent her a text. I was like, why don't you come up to my hotel room and let's do like a fun Facebook Live. We didn't plan. And she was like, okay. And she like trotted up to my hotel room and we did this Facebook Live. And to date, I think it's the funniest video I've ever made. And it was like, it's literally just us talking to the camera, but she and I just had this fire chemistry. And it had been on my mind ever since then. I was like, we've got to do stuff together. I was like, we just work so well together. We play off each other so well together. You know, we know what's coming next. We know what's okay and what's not okay with each other. There's just like such a, not only chemistry, but like deep, deep trust there of just like, you know, I'm going to go on this ride with you because I know you're not going to take it to a place that's not going to work for me. And so we started doing, I reached out to her again. Obviously at this point, her TikTok had exploded. I had had a few seasons of the show under my belt and we had kind of talked about doing something together, and I reached out to her and I was like, why don't you come up to New York? I was like, we'll have my video team just like film 12 episodes of a podcast and let's see how it goes. We didn't talk about it at all. And she flew in and we picked 12 topics and then we kind of like hid from each other until we started recording, because I was like, I don't want us to talk about anything off camera. And we sat down and, you know, so we did all 12 episodes over the course of, we did 6 one day, 6 the next day. And so we busted them out back to back. And I remember I kept thinking, I was like, oh, we're going to run out of energy. Like and it just never ended for us. I was like, I think I've got another 12 in me. I was like, you want to stay for another, you know, we didn't do that. And then I'm sure you guys also feel this, because no matter what kind of content you're doing, whether it's like a podcast or a video, you post it, but you don't know how people are going to react. I post things all the time that I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever made in my life. And it's crickets. You know what I mean? Like, nobody shares it. Nobody reacts to it. I get no feedback. And then I also, I had this video that I made about buffaloes. And I remember when I recorded that video, I was like, it's a cute little story. I didn't think twice about it. Like on my TikTok, I don't really have a very robust TikTok. I get like no engagement on TikTok for whatever reason. But this video got like 450,000 views. But then this other guy shared it and it got like 70 million views. It was, and I have no idea who this guy is. He's like some sort of social media influencer. And I was like, well, this is the most viewed thing I've ever done. I was like, people think I must be like an expert on water buffaloes, but I'm not. I was like, this is just a story I shared. Anyway, so it was kind of the same way with the podcast. We created it. We felt good about it. And then we're like, okay, let's put it out and see what the people think. You know, we don't have a podcast deal. We self-fund it. We pay for everything because we didn't want anybody getting in there and trying to play with what we do. You know, we were like, we've got a good thing. We know what we're good at. And I'm really grateful we did that because we were able to just do exactly what we wanted. And the feedback is just, it's so special. You know what I mean? It's like so nice to like share your stories, the things that you've gone through, and then hear from other people that you've never met in your life who are like, I needed this today. I'm going through something just like this. And I thought it was just me, you know, like the whole theme for us is like, you are not alone, you know, and that's what we want everybody to feel whenever they're leaving it. And it feels like it's working. As a matter of fact, I just booked my flight to Atlanta to film season 3. So very excited about that.
That's so impressive that you bulk record those, Matt. Can you imagine doing 6 back-to-back-to-back podcasts? Yeah. It's so different when you're interviewing people as opposed to just a conversation. Like Matt and I, when we first started the podcast, did a couple conversational ones, just me and him, and great chemistry and everything. I feel like we could do more of those, but you really have to be on when you have a guest to like pull out information stuff. And it's awesome when it's just kind of flowing back and forth.
Oh yeah.
It's not good. I like the season idea. That's good. Having like season 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Well, I also, so Glenda came down here like a month ago and we made like 5 homemade episodes just to kind of like hold us over in between filming the next 2. And it was the first time we ever tried an interview. And our guests were amazing. This has nothing to do with them. So we have an episode coming out with Mauricio. And then another episode coming out with Giselle Ugarte. And like both of them are amazing people with like, and what Glenda and I learned as soon as it was done, we like looked at each other and we're like, we're not interviewers. And you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's just like not our gift, like not what we're good at. Like, you know, she and I play off each other. But whenever like a third person was in the mix, I was like, why am I a mute all of a sudden? Yeah. Like, I was like, I have no idea to ask this person.
It's different. It's totally like a skill, like you said, and we don't always get someone like you on the show or Glenda on the show who are actually like very conversational. Like a lot of the times we have to like, we're finding ourselves, we have to pull stuff out of people because, you know, some people are just not comfortable really sharing. And it's like, you got to be on your game, like Eric said, to make sure that like, you know, we're not just sitting here doing nothing. Like, it's definitely weird.
You end up trying to think about your next question as opposed to listening to what the guest is saying. Obviously with you, it's been so easy just because you're so charismatic and everything you're saying is value packed. It's like, you know, we don't even have to think of what to say next, except for that question I stumbled over about 25 minutes ago.
That'll be deleted. Don't worry.
That'll be deleted. Exactly.
But now people won't know what you're talking about. They're like,
exactly. So,
well, delete also. That too.
Yeah, delete everything.
The whole episode is cut.
But exactly. No, I mean, that was awesome though. I mean, really stoked on it. I think a lot of people are going to find a lot of value. You're always so great at just like sharing your true story, and it's very relatable, very refreshing, especially someone at your level to see that you really came from nothing and you are where you are now. So it's super inspiring. I think our audience is going to absolutely love it. Eric and I will come on Glitter and Gay whenever, if you want to take a whack at another interview. I mean, we're there.
You know what we think we would need to do is we think it would need to be an in-person interview because she and I are always together. We've never done a podcast separately. We're always feeding off of each other. The hardest thing about filming with Glenda is I was like, talk into the mic because, you know, she's like, and then, and like, you know, and she's like jumping over the microphone. And I'm like, honey, I was like, they can't hear you. And that was a great line.
You're so right about the in-person. Matt and I always talk about this too, is everyone's Wi-Fi is different. There's always some mic issue. There's a camera issue. There's a lag. It's hard to see when the other person's about to jump in and talk. So that in person, you could react to the other person's expressions and kind of see, you know, facially, are they enjoying what's going on? Are they looking away? Like when you're sitting here in a box looking at a screen, it's so different. So totally agree. In person is the move. It's just possible for Matt and I because he's in Canada. I'm in LA. So maybe we go to Seasons at some point.
Yeah. I think that's the move.
I mean, I'm going to LA next week and Eric's not there. And then Eric won't step foot in Canada because it's too cold. So
yeah, I'll come back there in September.
Obviously. I was just about to say, I struggle with your excuse. I don't live anywhere near Glinda.
Yeah, but we're doing this weekly, and then there's, you know, so, and it's tough to bulk record if you're interviewing in person, because then you have to get 12 people that are in the same location. So that's another excuse.
Oh, right. Because you the interview part of it, I see what you're saying.
We basically have to travel around and go to like New York, Miami, LA, Canada, kind of hit all the major spots where the big agents are. Not that there's not big agents everywhere else, but at some point we'll charter a jet and start doing that.
Yeah, that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
But you know, a
Boomtown jet.
I was about to say Boomtown. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for being on. I will say before we go, I sent you a message in I think 2019 fangirling over you, saying how much I loved your content. You never read it, but it's okay. It's cool that you're now on the podcast. I was on a panel with you. So that was really cool, but it's funny how things come full circle. Thank you so much. Next time, read my fucking message.
I'm not good at DMs. DMs stress me out. I'm not much in my DMs.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. I was like, hey, like I love your content. I do some funny content up in Canada. Huh? That was pretty much my message.
That deserves a no response, I think. Yeah. I don't blame him.
I agree, no, but
I probably
Tyler,
didn't read it.
No, 100% you didn't. I can tell you that for sure. But thank you so much for being on. Where can the audience, where can the people find you?
Well, they can find me on Instagram at Tyler Whitman, but now you've heard it here. Do not DM me. Do not DM me.
You can find him on Craigslist also. Yeah. I'm sure he's got Craigslist there right now.
Don't DM him on Instagram, but comment on his water buffalo video and you'll get a response.
And definitely take a listen to the Glitter and Gay podcast. It is fire. We'll throw a link to that in the description as well. Tyler, thank you so much for coming on.
I love you guys. Thanks for having me.